rent, my amigos, is due, or I will have to evict you. Be there in a few. The power blows. How do you document real life when real life's getting more like fiction each day? Headlines, breadlines blow my mind, and now this deadline, eviction or pay. When the chords sound wrong, though they once sounded right and rare, but the notes are sour. Where is the power you once had to ignite the air?
And we're hungry and frozen.
It's a life that we've chosen.
How are we gonna pay? How are we gonna pay? How are we gonna pay? Last year's rent.
Well, communications and please identify yourself and limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Hi, my name's Pat Ring.
Excuse me.
Could you ask Mr. Boz if you wouldn't mind sitting down in one of the seats rather than standing in front of me? Excuse me, Mr. Boz. I don't think it's appropriate that you stand in the front of the room.
Chris,
other people can't see through you for the meeting. That's just, you should have a seat somewhere in front.
Hi, my name's Pat Ring. And as you know, I was involved in the protest out here in front of City Hall for months and months. And during that time, we endured a lot of litigation, and we're still currently involved in that litigation. So, Mike Rotkin, you're hereby subpoenaed to appear in court to testify in the trial of Dan Hopkins. Thank you.
Council members, members of the public, yesterday afternoon, Officer Marty Over drew blood in an arrest at Cathcart and Pacific. Over's victim was a homeless activist, Pat Ring, who spoke to you earlier. Over cuffed Ring so tightly that Ring's wrists were injured and visibly bleeding when Over was done. Yet Over would not take him to the hospital, would not give him medical treatment, and probably didn't mention the abusive treatment in his police report. What provoked this little bit of sadism, cruelty, and city-funded rage by one of our local blue-clad gunmen? Depending on what part of Over's statements you want to believe, Ring was arrested for leaning against a 2-inch-high cement planter or having an outstanding littering ticket. But the activist's real crime, according to outraged witnesses, was Ring's inquiry and informal cop watch as Over conducted harassment as usual at Hippie Corner, which I call, against all odds, Friendship Corner. Pat filed a complaint with the CPRB this morning, but check the stats and see how much weight they give to the testimony of homeless people. Not one complaint I am aware of by a homeless person has been sustained against a police officer in the last year. The board canceled its one monthly meeting yesterday. The membership is lost in arcane legal bickering, brown-nosing Chief Belcher, and ignoring critics. The membership, without real power and real commitment, without some real representation of poor people who know what it's like to be blood cuffed by someone like Over or assaulted by someone like Eveleth, the board is a sour and sad experiment in hypocrisy. Musician Skidmark Bob Duran goes to trial on 6 or 7 charges of song crime on Friday. Song crime in this case is the playing of songs like Have a Happy Fucking Day or Shoplifting at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, or other controversial melodies, songs that cops and some merchants don't like. They've been flipping out ordinances faster than flapjacks to silence Bob. Trespass in an alcove, unreasonable noise, disturbing the peace, and so on. I invite council members and the public to come to court at 1:30 p.m. Friday to watch this latest censorship action. Why isn't the city council pursuing other means for dealing with fines and the faces and the bodies that merchants don't like? Why isn't Mayor Matthews using the $10,000 downtown code of conduct study, which Rotkin buried last year? Could it be that she supports the right to choose for well-off women who don't have to hide from the sleeping van, but prefers a police response to poor people who run afoul of dog, skateboard, bicycle, sitting, or sleeping ordinances? I invite the mayor to a meeting tomorrow afternoon with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activists, to discuss these problems. 5:30 p.m., Coffee Roasting Company. Thank you.
Just a minute, Chris.
He has never showed up. That was the City Council meeting for February 11th. You're listening to Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, a recorded show concerned with civil rights for the poor on the streets of Santa Cruz.
Sandria Roth goes to the first jury trial for misdemeanor sleeping on March 24th and again on March 31st. That's the culmination. The appetizers coming up are Dan Hopkins' infraction sleep crime trials. Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins was the homeless activist, previously from the Coral Street Open Air Shelter and the River Street Refugees, who first challenged the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's community house permits after working with the group Save Our Shelters to keep open a campground during the winter of 1995-96. He and Save Our Shelters struck a bargain with negotiators Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau, employees of the CCH, only to find themselves betrayed, evicted from the campground, and put into the situation which most homeless people are in, almost all homeless people, the shadow, the grim, dark shadow of the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban. So Dan eventually started a protest, a 7.5-month protest at City Hall with dozens of other people, scores of other people, actually, throughout the course of that protest. Protest which was not just ignored by the city council, even though there was essentially, and this is admitted even by the mayor, I should say Mayor Rotkin, and I think probably Mayor Matthews, our current mayor, even though there is no legal place for people to sleep in the spring, summer, and fall at all, virtually, and there has been the armory in the winter. The council ignored that protest and then eventually went into extra innings to eliminate the protest by harassment through its police force, by extra legal harassment through a court injunction, which Sandria Roth will be facing in court on, I believe it's either March 31st or March 24th. Those are two sleep crime misdemeanor trials, one of them for sleeping twice, the other for sleeping once. Sleeping once became a misdemeanor thanks to Mike Rotkin's majority on the city council, aided in that instance by Councilmember Scott Kennedy, making it a crime to fall asleep once at City Hall, not just a simple infraction crime, but indeed a misdemeanor crime. And that injunction has not been dissolved. That injunction is still in force. If you decide you want to protest in front of City Hall and you are named on the injunction, you can face up to 6 months in jail for falling asleep once or covering up with blankets once. And as I said, Dan Hopkins goes to, the continuation of his infraction trial, which began on February 14th in Judge Tom Kelly's court, Kangaroo Kelly, as I call him, friendly enough man, but part of the judicial system. Last August, Kelly denied a demurrer asking that the sleeping ban be found unconstitutional on its face. Most of us are pretty clear it is unconstitutional on its face. A law that bars people from sleeping between 11 and 8:30 a.m. essentially criminalizes innocent conduct and puts an unreasonable burden on people if, for example, they need to travel if they're poor and they have no place to sleep. It obviously limits their right to travel. It limits their ability to be free from cruel and unusual punishment as guaranteed by the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And it also puts them in a position where they cannot get the equal protection of the laws under the 14th Amendment, because the law lends itself to selective enforcement, people, and is in fact selectively enforced. This actually is an argument as to why it's unconstitutional as applied, and that is indeed what attorney Catnip Kate Wells is putting forward in the case of Dan Hopkins. She is trying to show the judge, and I don't think she's going to have too much success with Tom Kelly, who's pretty much shown his opinion on this, but perhaps somewhere along the line an appeals judge up higher in the food chain there, or lower in the food chain, depending on how you want to look at it, will see that people who are homeless get harassed. People who are truckers, people who are middle class usually do not, for example, sleeping in their vehicles. Dan Hopkins' sleep crime infraction trial, and he's being tried in a test to all three sections of 6.36.010, both Section A, sleeping ban itself, Section B, the blanket ban, cover up with blankets after 11, go to jail, and Section C, the camping or encampment ban, which makes it illegal to intend to set up a campsite or to set up a campsite with the intent to stay overnight. All three sections Dan is facing prosecution for, and indeed, former mayor Michael Rotkin has twice come to court to testify, and that testimony has twice been deferred, first on February 14th because time ran out, then again yesterday on March 7th because Attorney Kate Wells took sick, and the trial will be resuming, as I understand it, on the 14th of March, on Friday at 1:30 in Tom Kelly's Department 1 of the Municipal Court at 801 Ocean Street. So if you want to come and attend that, please do. You can use support. And I say to you, it will be quite an education for you to watch as city officials like Rotkin, who just 5 days ago at the City Council's special study session on homelessness were talking about the fact that there was no shelter and sort of saying they really wanted to help the homeless by getting the armories open again next year. The governor has apparently decided up to now that there's going to be no reopening of the armories as winter shelter. Not that the armories are particularly a catch-all solution for everyone or deal with the problem in the winter to any truly significant extent for the majority of homeless people. They don't. Armory shelter space is 150 or less. In fact, some say 100 pretty much bulges it out, in spite of claims by ISSB Director Wendy Butler that it's differently. I think she's mistaken on that. It's generally agreed by clients. There's limited space there. As I said, in spite of the fact that Rotkin supports legislation, and indeed the whole council does, that's, again, more NIMBY thinking. It's okay to support actions by somebody else to help the situation, but when it comes to something within your own jurisdiction, your own bailiwick, and the city council itself, you do nothing. And here we have Rotkin prepared to prosecute, persecute, and testify against homeless activists whose only crime was sleeping publicly in front of the city hall and in front of the police station at a time when there was and still is no legal shelter for people to sleep at for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz. Also happening on March 10th, actually postponed one day to March 11th, but if you want to hear the motions that are preparatory, you can come in on the 10th. In Department 1, again, Tom Kelly, is the City Hall Sleep Crime Chain Gang Lockdown Trial, which has to do with the demonstrations that happened on September 10th of last year at City Council, where seven people were arrested for chaining themselves to the furniture in protest against, again, the council's complete inaction on the sleeping ban. In fact, its insistence on getting harsher on protesters on killing the messenger bringing the bad message to city council, which was that people are suffering, people are unable to sleep at night because they're being harassed by the police, because they're afraid of being harassed by the police, because they're being harassed by troll busters, because there is a law that makes it illegal for people to sleep, something they have to do. Anyway, seven were arrested in a demonstration, a very vivid demonstration that provoked City Council to call an hour's recess, provoked lots of people angrily shouting inside and outside the council, we have the right to sleep at night, similar slogans. Perhaps we'll kind of reactivate some of those tapes and play them for you during the course of this trial. This is a trial of seven people, and this is a trial where people face up to $1,000 fines and 6 months in jail each. And I understand, actually, deals have been proposed. If they'll just let this trial go away, then, hey, they can do service with groups like Food Not Bombs. But the protesters aren't having any. They're saying as soon as the sleeping ban goes away, then maybe we can let the trials go away. But until that happens, at least this is my understanding of what the underlying mentality is behind the people in the sleep crime chain gang lockdown trial, which again starts on March 10th for motions, March 11th for jury selection. Testimony will probably start the 11th or the 12th. This again is Municipal Court, Department 1. Starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, this stuff usually. Dan Hopkins' trial resumes on March 14th at 1:30 in Department 1, to repeat that. And Sandria Roth's trials start March 24th and 31st in Department 2 under Commissioner Salazar. So, stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 for updates on these trials, for updates on the situation at City Council. We're going to have interviews here, and you're listening to Bathrop's peer Robert Norris here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM with music unauthorized but provided by the musical group that did the Rent musical in New York City.
We're not gonna pay. We're not gonna pay. We're not gonna pay. Last year's rent. This year's rent. Next year's rent. Rent, 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 rent. We're not gonna pay rent. Cause everything is rent.
Christmas bells are ringing. Christmas bells are ringing. Christmas bells are ringing somewhere else, not here.
You okay, honey?
I'm afraid so.
They get any money?
No, had none to get, but they purloined my coat. Well, you missed the sleeve. Thanks.
Hell, it's Christmas Eve. I'm Angel.
Angel. Indeed. An angel of the first degree.
Friends call me Collins. Tom Collins.
Nice tree.
Let's get a Band-Aid for your knee, I'll change. There's a life support meeting at 9:30. Yes, this body provides a comfortable home for the acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
As does mine.
Wow, we'll get along fine. Get you a coat, have a bite, make a night, I'm flush.
But my friends are waiting.
You're cute when you blush. The more the merrier, ho, ho, ho. And I do not take no.
There's lots going on in Santa Cruz on many fronts for civil rights for poor people. One front not covered too thoroughly is the front regarding drugs, and specifically herbs, medical marijuana. As almost everyone knows, Proposition 215 at the last election and then a previous county advisory proposition put the county sheriffs on notice that medical marijuana was considered by the majority of people in this county to be a right and an important element of treatment for many individuals suffering a variety of ailments. Is the sheriff's department still engaging in harassment of people, and how does this harassment impact poor people? Well, the answer is yes, it is still engaging in harassment, and it impacts poor people in a dramatic, negative way. You're now going to hear an interview with Jane Kaiser. Jane is an activist for PIRC, Patients Inmates Rights Collective, a group concerned with the rights of people being held involuntarily in psychiatric wards and hospitals. She's been doing this work for over a decade, at least that's how long I've known her. I ran into her in the courthouse right outside the metal detector, actually right inside the metal detector. There's now a searching post where you have to essentially strip down, take everything you have that's possibly might contain any kind of contraband off your person. I don't mean your clothes, but everything else. Occasionally creates a log jam, and I like to interview people in line about this, but On this occasion, I found one person had been taken aside and held under arrest, and this was my friend Jane Kaiser. So I interviewed her, and something rather strange happened in the course of the interview. She was assaulted by the police. You get to hear this on tape. This is last January, late in January.
Kaiser here at the county courthouse, 10 to 2. She is being cited for a medical marijuana pipe.
He found the pipe in my purse. He found the marijuana I had picked up from medical marijuana this morning, this afternoon, at a court hearing here at 1:30. And
what happened at the court hearing at 1:30?
Well, I haven't been there yet.
You're here to attend.
Going through the metal detector, and he opened up my purse and looked in, and then he took it and cited me, and I don't know if I'll get it back, but I need it for pain, and I'm a little bit upset. I thought medical marijuana was legal.
And this was prescribed by a physician?
Yes. Yes, it's prescribed by a physician, and they have all the paperwork at medical marijuana, and all they would have to do is call up, and there I would have the paperwork. That's what the first thing they asked me, do I have a doctor's note? I said, yes. Well, I don't know if I had a doctor's note, and I'm carrying it, if it makes any difference, but I can go over it and get it Xeroxed from them if I need to carry a note. I thought the card with my number on, and it's on file, would be enough.
So you have a card indicating you're a member of the Cannabis Club?
Yes.
You have
it
with you here?
Yes,
They have it?
Along with my driver's license, and the pipe, and the prescription.
You have the prescription as well?
Well, I picked up the prescription today. It's a small bag of marijuana.
And what condition?
It's ridiculous.
Jane, what condition do you have that requires you to use marijuana?
Well, there's different conditions that can be given for, and that's on the prescription that's signed by the doctor.
Right, but for you, what is the reason you use it?
I stay away from personal things. I think this is just in general for the public.
It's not a matter
of anyone that, you know, it's not that. It's a prescription and it's on file with,
right,
I suppose, a legally run organization.
Right. And you're here to attend a hearing for?
It's an LPS hearing. They have them every Friday at 1:30, and a friend asked me to specifically come to her written hearing.
That's mine.
She has one notice. This yours?
Yeah, unless you want to read it.
You mind stepping over there, please?
I'm fine.
Okay. Just a little?
No.
Okay. I'm new to this issue. I'm going to up here in one count of the health and safety code. It's 11357B. The health and safety code, possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana. It's not an admission of guilt. It's only a promise to appear. And if you appear at the Municipal Court of Santa Cruz, 701 Ocean Street, on the 25th of February at 0830. I need your signature, right here.
And so do I get my pipe and that if I just leave quietly?
No, ma'am. So the judge wants to give it back to you and drop this issue.
That's
fine. As far as I'm concerned, still a violation of the law. I'm required to enforce it.
As far as I'm concerned, you're stealing medication.
We have a case number here. If you feel I'm stealing, you can file a grievance with the sheriff's office.
Good idea.
And my name is on there, too. My name and badge number is right there. You feel that me enforcing the law is wrong, then you can file a grievance.
Gerald.
You have a copy of this also? No.
And then do I
not
get my...
This
thank you very much.
Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Hey, come over. Witnesses!
What are you doing? Wait a minute.
All right. We're here. We have two deputies twisting Jane Kaiser's arm. We have a deputy Deputy Fitzgerald just assaulted this woman, violently wrenching her arm behind her back. Her left arm is now putting her in handcuffs. Hey, I'm right here, and I'm a witness to this, deputy. This is a medical marijuana bust, folks. This is a medical marijuana bust. She's being arrested for having a medical marijuana prescription right here.
It's a pain in my arm.
This is Deputy at work here.
Jan, you want me to call anyone for you?
I am recovering also from colon cancer and operation.
What's she being arrested for, deputy? What's she being arrested for?
Keep your voice down. You're disturbing the courts.
I'm trying to find out what she's being arrested for.
Courts are in session.
What right here, is it?
Well, you can leave, okay? You're going to cause a disturbance.
For what?
You can leave. For disturbing the court.
I haven't done anything.
Okay.
The deputy arresting Jane Kaiser was Deputy Fitzgerald, who made a similar arrest 3 weeks later on the same person, the same metal detector. Jane Kaiser apparently feels that she has the right to carry her medical marijuana with her, needs to do so, and Deputy Fitzgerald feels he needs to harass her, drag her into court in spite of the expressed wishes of the majority of the people of the state of California, in spite of basic compassion, the dictates of basic compassion, and in spite of what I'm told are supposed to be meaningful protocols between Sheriff Mark Tracy and the Marijuana Club. Where are those meaningful protocols? And I hope the Medical Marijuana Club is standing firmly behind Jane Kaiser in her court trials, because she's being charged with not only possession of marijuana, but destruction of evidence. Actually, it's called removal or destruction of evidence for attempting to reclaim her card, her cannabis club card. Gerald, as you can hear on the tape, the deputy went into a virtual rage, began to grab at her arms, pulled them behind her back, twisting them and putting her in considerable pain. And I believe she actually told me she was in continuing pain in spite of the passage of time. On the second arrest, which I don't have on tape, he didn't physically abuse her. But again, the whole process of intimidation, the process of stealing her medication, the process of forcing her to go to court is itself
cruel, unusual, unnecessary, unjustified, unfair punishment.
And unfortunately, punishment that seems to continue regularly for Jane Kaiser as an individual, and also for other people, for other things. I complained to the Sheriff's Department with a written complaint to their Internal Affairs Department. If you want to do that, if a deputy has harassed you, you can't go to the Citizens Police Review Board in downtown Santa Cruz because it's not within their jurisdiction. You have to instead go to the Internal Affairs Department or the Grand Jury or the Justice Department or the State Attorney General's Office. There's a variety of avenues. If you've been harassed by the police, give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012 and get some specifics. They can give you some forms to use. Again, what I did is I went straight to the Deputy Sheriff's Office and filed a statement. And I've learned since from an old fighter for legal rights named Richard Quigley that there's an interesting way to proceed going about the business of filing police complaints that makes them more effective. And that procedure, and I put this out for you, and you're going to hear Richard Quigley shortly talking about this himself, is make the complaint itself as short as possible, even a one-sentence complaint. I accuse officer so-and-so of excessive force on such-and-such a date at such-and-such a time, and then attach a long account as an affidavit. Because apparently it's much easier for the police to dismiss your complaint by finding some error in the body of the complaint if you make the complaint a lengthy one. Even if the rest of the complaint is completely valid, they can find one sentence in error. But if you file the complaint and it's only one sentence, and then you have a long affidavit, that's another matter, apparently. So let's skip ahead a couple weeks from the incident you just heard of Jane Kaiser being harassed, well, attacked, physically attacked in court, and then harassed several weeks later, and going through a continuing ordeal simply because she's trying to use a small legal amount of medical marijuana. Let's skip ahead to what happens when someone with a video camera tries to take pictures of what Deputy Fitzgerald and his fellow deputies are doing as they force people to go through this undignified process of proving they're not criminals carrying bombs or guns into the courthouse. Procedure I find onerous and futile. I think if a person wants to plant a bomb in the courthouse, she or he can find a way past that metal detector. The rest of us, however, have to essentially drop our civil liberties at the door and essentially give deputies like Fitzgerald, who doesn't seem to me to be a bad sort of guy, but when put in this position, his worst traits come out, somewhat similar to Deputy Jim Thurber, who falsely accused Pat Ring of various crimes, had him assaulted last summer, and Ring recently won his justification in a four-count jury trial, which he won with the help of public defender Tony Boal in, I guess it was early February. Anyway, let's see what Fitzgerald does when confronted with a camera. Or let's hear the account of what he did.
So it's February 28, 1997. We're in line here at the courthouse metal detector at the county courthouse.
What's going on?
Hi.
We don't want Johnson here at the courthouse. Go ahead, Becky. What happened here?
I'm standing right back in that corner against the wall, and Officer Fitzgerald came up to me and told me that not to stand there, to move along, and not to videotape. I informed him it was a public place, and that that I wasn't doing anything. That he was mistaken.
Right.
You know, and then he came over and pushed his hand on my camera and pushed it back.
That's a battery, actually. So the officer was taken from assaulting elderly women to battering photographers. Is that
yes,
the situation?
Yes. Well, yeah, I sort of did mention that I thought maybe it would be a good spot to stand to watch him beat up another old lady. I could probably get some good footage.
Any witnesses to this?
Most
of you interfere with any kind of operations here, you're going to be dealt with accordingly. Is that correct?
How was I interfering when I was standing against the wall?
Robert, is that correct? If you interfere here and screw up,
was she interfering?
No, I'm asking, are you going to interfere today, Robert, and cause problems?
Have I ever interfered?
He's concerned that I may interfere.
If I've interfered, then you should charge me with an offense, Deputy Fitzgerald. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was concerned that I may interfere in the future.
Oh. Future menace.
And I tried to explain to him that there's a rather point of the law that you cannot prosecute or take care of crimes that have not occurred yet.
That would be much more convenient, though, if you could eliminate the criminals before they become criminals. For example, there's an obvious criminal over there. We could get rid of her and him.
Well, it's too late. I'm already
home.
It's.
Right. She's. You have a criminal case today, Mr. Horst?
No, I'm reporting, actually.
Then why are you here, sir?
I'm reporting on things like police abuse, you know, like deputies like yourself harassing photographers.
I don't want to be around here, Dad. That's police abuse.
Well, we want to make sure you guys don't do that. That's the point, you know?
That was another thing he said to me was that I didn't have to come down here. I could just go somewhere else if I didn't like, this whole metal detector routine, which is, have you seen the size of this line, Robert? I mean, my God, it wraps around.
There's at least 20 or 30 people in line here waiting for the metal detector.
More like 50. It took me 15 minutes to go through this line, and then I was hassled by these people afterwards. Unbelievable.
Well, I think you should take some good shots of this, and if the deputy is correct, I'm sure that the civil court will not hold against him when he is, in fact, sued for damages, right?
Sounds good to me.
Right. I mean, if the deputy is right, he has nothing to be afraid of.
If he's within the law, then,
that's,
you know,
right.
Then why should he fear some scrutiny by the press? I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. So are you filing a complaint with the Internal Affairs Department about this?
Yes, I am. I think it's harassing of the press.
Okay.
And that should not be tolerated.
We have three more deputies arriving. I'm quite sure what the purpose here is. Deputy McCauley has arrived, talking to Deputy Fitzgerald.
Almost to the point, not on the edge, trying to interfere with this program with us.
Is that your intention, Mr. Garson?
No. What happened here is she was videotaping from a distant position. He came over, put his hand over her camera in a completely illegitimate manner, and she has it on videotape. The truth can be determined by the videotape, you know?
Please don't disrupt what we're trying
certainly
to do.
Certainly not.
We're trying to make
certainly
the court
not
safe. That's the only thing.
I appreciate that. However, when deputies begin to harass people, that's my concern. As a member of the public. You know that.
Don't interfere with what we're trying to do.
Not doing that at all. You know that, Deputy.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Good luck in court today, Lane.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you to not stand within the close proximity of me and do that, okay? I'm going to ask you to stand back a little way so I can do my job.
She's back 15 feet at the moment. Why are you advancing on her, Deputy Fitzgerald?
That's more than 15 feet.
You, what are you doing here? You came over to us. What are you talking about?
Please don't interfere here. Do you have a court case? Go ahead and handle your court case.
Go back to your job, Deputy. Don't interfere with us, okay? I'm not interfering with anybody. Okay, I'm just going to go into the court case. I stopped here briefly, Sergeant McCauley, because I was asked to do so by Ms. Johnson.
You may continue.
Thank you.
Sergeant McCauley, the superior of Deputy Fitzgerald, gave us the go-ahead to continue what we were doing, which was simply dealing with trials that were coming up in the courts and anything else that happens along the way. And I find this is also something that folks should consider leaving time for if they are able to do so. Frequently when you're on your way to something, you'll see a squad car with its lights flashing, or two or three squad cars that have pulled over. And of course, many of us have busy schedules that don't permit our diverting ourselves from what we're doing, but it's often very important that we have enough leeway that we take a little time, even if it means we're going to be late, to keep an eye on the watchers, to watch the watchers, to make sure that police are not abusing basic citizens, that police are not committing violence against citizens, that police are not intimidating citizens. And if they aren't, then there is nothing they should be afraid of. The public has a perfect right and, in fact, a duty to watch them. And in a way, that helps good police officers, because bad police officers are then held in line. And if abuse does occur, it doesn't fall to the police officer to turn in his fellow officer or her fellow officer. They are in a position where the public can make those kinds of statements. Unfortunately, there is no real process for doing this other than taking someone to court. I mean, I think it's valuable to make a documentary record by contacting the Citizens Police Review Board or whatever internal agency covers the police department that you're seeing being abusive, whether that's Parks and Rec is covered by Parks and Rec authorities, PSI and First Alarm are security guards, hosts. Even though they're not police officers, they are the ears and eyes of the police force, as they themselves have admitted. You should go and make a complaint if you see something happening and keep a copy of that complaint for yourself and contact, as I said, SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, local police review agency, which kind of tries to keep records on those things. Well, shortly after this incident at the courthouse on February 28th, with Becky Johnson and Deputy Fitzgerald, we interviewed Richard Quigley, mentioned earlier. Richard Quigley is a longtime freedom fighter, and let's get into that interview. There are lots of interesting things in that interview.
Here, Richard Quigley, the notorious freedom fighter. He's here in court today with his United States Freedom Fighter, I Was Not Born to Be Forced t-shirt.
Right.
To say the least. So what's up?
Well, I'm here on two matters. One is my own arraignment. They have decided that they're finally going to move against me on the fact that I need to get from one place to another, and they have, the government has commandeered the use of the roadways, taken it away from the people, and they've licensed it, and that's all just insane. I mean, and so that they can control everybody. They know if they can control the motion on the roadways, that they can control life and death.
In the government's words, what is the charge against you?
Oh, driving on a suspended driving privilege.
We actually had a long conversation about this, which I recorded, in the cafeteria of the county building about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, well, that
case involved, I believe, the woman with you.
Okay, now that's another case that's on later today.
The case of
People versus Mara Whitler, and that's where she was inappropriately, in their words, was monitoring the Smog 2 checkpoint down in Aptos last August.
She is charged with
148 PC, not giving head when the cop says, give me head.
Or interfering with, obstructing, or otherwise doodying the police officer.
Yeah, it's the catch-all 148. I mean, when they have no charges against somebody, they charge them with 148, resisting arrest, impeding an officer. That's all written in there. It's just.
Are you two representing yourselves, or you have an attorney?
No, Mara's represented by Kate Wells, and she's doing an excellent job. And me, I have no need for representation. I'm in no way incompetent.
You're a reprobate.
No, I'm a competent pro se litigant.
Cool say. I mean, cool. So now, what's likely to happen in both these cases today? Is there going to be any action?
I'm asking the judge, we're going to be dealing with some matters that are not straightforward as far as the charges go. relative to the harassment of the circle of friends around me. I think you're probably aware that, everyone who stands close to you is up against the wall or in jail in, because of the work that you do. And I'm finding that in my life and the work that I do. And we've got situations where people are being dragged out of their cars and arrested, 148, you know.
Give me some names and time.
Well, Laura Soderman, night before last, Larry Soderman was stopped by a couple of officers. We have no idea why. There was no probable cause, and they will not state any, and there's none in the record. And dragged out of a car, assaulted, pretty much beat up, and dragged down to jail.
Charged with?
148 BC, you know. And it was because she, well, we don't know. We don't know why the officer stopped her. So she was charged with resisting arrest, but there doesn't seem to have been
any cause for arrest.
No arrest. I mean, it's non sequitur. Yeah, it's a non sequitur.
It's never happened before.
No, it happens all the time.
Oh.
It happens all the time. Oh. The little girl that was charged with 148 on the roadblock, same thing. You know, she's charged with resisting and delaying and impeding and all that stuff, and none of that's real. It's just something that they can come in and it's vague enough that you sit there and say, yeah, well, were you, and well, sort of, kind of, you know, what you
what
would
was
call
the,
it.
What's the nature of the hearing today?
I'm being arraigned for driving without a license.
And Amara's hearing?
Amara's hearing is a discovery motion, and what we're doing is we are going to we're trying to find out what CHP policy is relative to pat-down searches of women. As you guys remember, that they did a real neat job of making sure that she wasn't carrying anything in her bra.
They didn't give her an anal cavity search, however.
No, but close. And we're going to be, the policy by which they act on these roadblocks is kept, they tell us in Sacramento, there's no local documents that we could subpoena. So the cop is coming in to testify as to CHP policy because he has seen the Holy Grail, I guess, at one point in his career, and he's going to bring forward the commandments from above.
So in other words, he's going to give us a moment of vision of what this document was.
Yeah, what the policies and procedures of the California
and
Highway Patrol are.
What is this hearing and whose court?
It's 10 o'clock and it's Kelly's court.
And in essence, there's going to be simply a discussion of this document. Any other documents coming forward?
No, this thing today has to do with the cop and his understanding of the policies and procedures of the CHP. He is going to build the record as to what it is that is his understanding of what is expected of them.
By the way, deputy with the gray hair nearest us, Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Fitzgerald.
He is actually... Hi there, Connie. He put his hand over Becky Johnson's video camera as she
I noticed there was some confusion about that, yeah.
He also assaulted a woman, a medical marijuana person named Jane Kaiser, 6 feet away from me about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I think what you're going to find is that underpinning all this stuff is some real bad training. We've got a sheriff by the name of Tracy who is clearly right out of the Third Reich. He's you know, it's... He's trying to build a little police state county here, and he's being encouraged. He's just not strong-willed or intelligent enough not to allow it to happen. And so you're just seeing
our head sheriff, Mark Tracy.
Yeah, the one I lost in my election bid against in 94.
He's a step down from Al Noren.
Oh my God, over and down. Yeah, no question about it.
So you feel he's worse than Noren, significantly.
By far and away. Yeah.
Your attorney, Kate Wells, probably does not agree with you. You know.
Well, Kate and I don't agree about a lot of things, but that doesn't mean that she's not a competent litigator.
Yes, indeed. I like the way you take the positive perspective on this. Let me offer you a cup of coffee before we go any further.
Sure.
And now for those of you who are asleep 20 minutes ago, here's a brief and concise description from video camera person Becky Johnson of her encounter with Deputy Fitzgerald on the same day.
So at 8:45 a.m., I came back, and I went and stood in the corner approximately 8 feet from the officers.
At least an hour.
Officer Fitzgerald came over and told me not to stand there. I said, why? I'm not bothering anything. He said, just move along. And then he told me I was not allowed to videotape him. When I held up my camera, he approached me, pushed my camera with his hand, and told me to leave as, I quote, I may interfere with his duties.
Specify how many feet you were away from the...
I was 8 feet. And here, this is Greg Mattingly.
Hi, Greg.
A witness.
Hi, I witnessed the part from Fitzgerald putting his hand up and telling her to leave. She was in the corner at least 8 feet away from the operation of the security thing. And as a matter of fact, he made it his point to get closer and closer and closer to her in the course of the 5 minutes I watched. What I found interesting is once Becky left, three other people were standing there for at least 15 minutes that were not, didn't seem to be impeding anybody's job at that point because nobody talked to him or anything.
And Fitzgerald was aware of those people?
He was standing in the same spot he was earlier.
So he saw them?
He saw them, right. And then I went and stood there for about 5 minutes, a little after nine, and he was still there along with two other sergeants and two other deputies, and nobody said anything to me.
Did you make eye contact with him at that time?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he knew you were there, and he could have spoken to you had he wished.
Yes. Yes.
Have you given Becky your phone number? And
not yet. We were just getting started when you came. So.
Richard Quigley
was
also
with us. Absolutely.
What did you say, Richard?
Same thing. I mean, she was being hassled by this guy for trying to just to take. And in fact, I heard some discussion about him explaining that she was impeding the whole thing by standing there. And of course, impeding is the trigger word because that means they get to slap her to the ground, cover up, and haul her off for the old 148.
As they did with Jane Kaiser about a half a month ago.
No, anybody. I mean, that's their catch-all is 148.
So how far away were you from this whole thing?
Oh, I was standing within 5 foot of her. Through a portion of it. I mean, I was right, standing right there. I was coming through the line like everybody else, and I'm wondering why he's hassling her about that. I mean, I have a sense of appreciation for the security that's where it's at, that limited, very limited, but it does not get to the point where it includes any sort of censorship of the activity. If we cannot video... I have a sense of appreciation for the security that's where it's at, that limited, very limited, but it does not get to the point where it includes any sort of censorship of the activity. If we cannot videotape what we're doing, maybe we ought to consider what we're doing.
Right. And there was an extremely long line this morning, I noticed.
Yeah, very long line. But that's going to happen when you've got a bunch of cattle that have to make their cattle call all at the same time. I think they're going to have to do something about the scheduling and stop these mock trials. I think all these kids are what really messed it up this morning. Kids don't need to know what's going on because what they're learning is a fiction anyway. They need to send them down here two or three at a time and let them sit down here and see the real world. And then they'll have an education what goes on in that court. A mock trial that does not have the mock treason is pretty much, you know, not inconsistent with the reality.
Are you prepared to file a complaint with the Internal Affairs Department around Becky's case?
I will sign on I will co-sign with her in a heartbeat, certainly. Certainly. As a separate complaint, it would probably just diminish the validity of her complaint.
Thank you, Richard Quigley.
Carrie Mandich.
Carrie, you're here in court today on the steps, warrant for petty theft. Are you, you've been running around stealing hams from Safeway?
No, sir. I took candles on Christmas Eve.
You did?
Yeah, it was my first time I got caught.
I see. What store caught you?
Long's.
And so you were trying to be 1,000 points of light, and they plunge you into the darkness.
Pretty much so, yeah. I shouldn't have done it, though.
Any interest in the campground, the Safe Haven campground people have been discussing?
I'd like to learn more about that, yeah. I'd like to find a place to park my van safely.
Uh-huh. So have you been hassled by sleeping in your van?
Oh, yes. We get moved a lot. Parking tickets after parking ticket.
Never gotten a camping ticket in your van?
No.
You usually park within city limits or outside?
Yes, in city limits.
So you think the police are unusually polite with you, or are they simply... not noticing it?
Simply not noticing me by choice. I try to hide out.
Anything else you want to add for whoever may be listening to this?
No, just no.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Richard Quigley.
Well, I'm down here because there's a sergeant by the name of Devereaux who is part of the new Aptos Service Center. This is Community Service Center of the Sheriff's Department. And one of the first official acts of Sergeant Devereaux was to tag the parking lot with his own special kind of graffiti, you know, the way the gangs do. And he painted a curb and a parking bumper red, which is contrary to code, and wrote sheriff on it in white letters, and that's his private parking place. I have been trying to get that corrected because I think it sets a real bad example for young people that only the cops can break the law. What they see is that anybody can break the law, it's just the cops get away with it. So I've been working on that, and Sergeant Devereaux took exception to the fact that I would park in his sheriff's red tag parking place, and he couldn't cite me because is not authorized, therefore. And he wrote the ticket, and I shoved it up his ass. And so then he stalked me and arrested me. He made up the charge that I was exceeding the speed limit because he lived in the assumption that I was supposed to have a license to drive. But what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a sergeant that is creating all of this hassle to protect his parking place. Laurie Soderman parked in his parking place on Friday last. Night before last, Laurie Soderman was dragged out of her car and mugged by two deputies.
Deputies named?
Don't know. She would know. I can't remember the guy's name. Something. I don't know. Herzog or Hertzwitz or... Hertzner? Yeah, Hertzner, and I don't know who the other one was.
Sheriff's deputy.
Yeah, and they're out there making sure that Sergeant Devereaux is protected his parking place, and anybody that messes with Sergeant Devereaux, he will not cite him for parking in the parking place, but he will send his thugs out to drag him out of the car in the middle of the night and beat him and charge him with 148. I mean, this is a way that...
You've gone to our crusading newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Why in God's name would I do that?
Yeah, good point.
There's nothing that I have to say to them that they'd be the least bit interested in. This is not their line. Their line is, oh, my God, somebody's, violating Sergeant Devereaux. Now, you might see that. In fact, he was given the Officer of the Year Award by the ABTOS BFW, and I took a videotape that had an audio track on it in which Devereaux says, you push my buttons, and I'll show you what I can do, both legally and illegally, too. Okay?
In response to what statement did he say?
It was an inquiry about stopping kids in the middle of the night and frisking them over riding skateboards up against a car kid, and they frisk them and all this stuff. And the kid was standing there with one of our guys, and they were talking to Devereaux about what is it is this okay to do this? And Devereaux said, well, we do all sorts of stuff. And my friend said, well, does that mean you do all such sorts of stuff, both legal and illegal too? And Devereaux said, Jerry, you push my buttons, and I'll show you what I can do both legally and illegally, too, okay?
And Devereaux allowed him to get away with a tape recording on this?
Jerry didn't know that the video camera was running, so that he didn't know that went on video, on the audio track of that videotape. He didn't know it. He's not a competent camera operator. So not only did Devereaux not know it was there, but the guy that actually ran the camera didn't know it was there.
Again, who was doing the camera?
One of the chaplains, in fact, the chaplain for the United States Freedom Flyer, a guy by the name of Jerry Henry.
And this was some sort of routine videotaping that was happening, or he was a companion of one of the youths?
No, he was learning to carry that videotape camera, the video camera, sort of keep a record of what was going on around him. Yeah, we're going in now. So, whose copy is this?
This is mine. You can have some.
No, I don't want any.
All right.
Your name? Jeremiah Duran. I got chapped for having a quarter ounce of misdemeanor for under an ounce, and they the district attorney let me go. She let me go because for religious purposes, because I told her it was for religious and medicinal for medical because it helps me calm down, and they let me go, but I'm still screwed because my car blew up on the way here to go to court.
So God has punished you.
He has punished me by getting me stuck in Santa Cruz in a sense.
Yes. Now what? What was the circumstances under which you were actually charged with this?
He pulled me over for my taillight. The cop, the officer, the sheriff, Santa Cruz County Sheriff.
His name was?
I don't know his name, but he pulled me over, and he didn't even tell me when he arrested me what he was pulling me over for. I told him that I was nervous, and he didn't, because it was my first time being pulled over, and for him, that was probable cause to search me, even though...
Did you consent to the search?
Yes, I did, because...
Big mistake.
Well, I had to. I told him where my stuff was because if he found it, he would have arrested me.
No, he would have arrested you anyway.
No, he didn't arrest me, though.
No, he has no right to search you. In the future, if anyone asks you to search, unless... Just don't consent. Say, I respectfully decline. You don't have to be nasty about it, but you can just say no.
I didn't know that as my first time being pulled over.
Of course. So anyway, he searched you. He found a quarter ounce of marijuana. Where was this?
This was in a flashlight that was underneath.
Where were you stopped? Where
I was stopped in front of, by the high school in Felton, right in front of the San Lorenzo Valley High School. And
any witnesses to this?
There was no witnesses. I was by myself. I was on my way home because I have to drive up north. I live way up north, and I have to go to college. And now I'm screwed because I have no way to get back to college.
Well, it's part of your educational training here.
I'm taking EMT, man. They should be happy that I'm doing something to help them out because I'm learning a skill that
EMT
can help.
Is
emergency medical technician. And now it's like, I don't know, I'm going to flunk the class because I came to court, so I won't be arrested.
call the dean and tell him you're getting your education the hard way?
Yes, I'm getting my education in the hardest way of all, which is through the system.
Right, so you're actually not a Santa Cruzan yourself.
Well, I used to live in Santa Cruz for 4 years, and I came down to visit my friends before I started college, and then I got in trouble, and now I'm double screwed.
Another happy story here at the courthouse. But let's turn to the hero of the hour, Vince. What the hell is your last name?
Lombardo.
Lombardo. I'm going to work on that. Lombardo. You're here as a witness, or actually as a supporter of Skidmark Bob Duran. Correct.
Correct. We were involved in an arrest together, and he's here for a hearing, actually, for vandalism, for restitution on a police vehicle, and.
Let me ask you for the background, if I understand this properly. Bob is a Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster. He's also a worker with Food Not Bombs and Cop Watch.
Right.
In August, there was illegal behavior by the landlords of the building which you and Bob lived in refusing to give you relocation monies, which you recently won in court.
Correct. We did.
In order to dramatize this issue to the community and also to try to get some kind of action on it, perhaps also to educate other members of the community who are being similarly mistreated by landlords, you held out in a somewhat theatrical way on the roof of the building, and police had to come and essentially arrest all of you to take you away, but you would have left quite peacefully had relocation money has been granted.
Correct. We would have left in a timely manner if they had paid us in a timely manner. We would have been long gone, and the house probably would still be standing today, boarded up and squatted by homeless people who probably need a place to stay anyway, but we felt that the issue was too important to just not let it go and not just blow it off, so we stayed, partly due to the fact that we had nowhere else to go, and without the money that was owed to us by the landlords, we couldn't afford a place in this town because the rents are just outrageously high in this town.
Judge Samuel Stevens found that you were quite entitled to those rents. There were no exceptions, that the landlords were in default. And in fact, this is the case, presumably, for the other, how many other tenants would this involve?
Probably about 12 other people.
And the course of this situation, police arrested and brutalized somewhat Bob Duran. As I remember, he wasn't too happy. He was kind of screaming as they dragged him off.
Yeah, they put the cuffs on his wrist really tight. He was in a lot of pain, and they threw him in the vehicle. And when he was the last person to be arrested, everybody that had showed up to the protest, there was a good number of people, maybe 30, 40 people there.
40 people in the streets and 7 of you in the housetop.
Eight of us. And at that, he was the last person to get arrested, and people just swarmed the vehicle and started rocking it back and forth.
For the first time in history, you have asked that your own trial not be tape recorded. Is this Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bob Duran talking?
It's just tape recorded from you. No, actually, I didn't want to,
rock the boat. Could that be it, Bob?
Yeah. Yeah.
not a healthy approach. I'm becoming worried about you. So what happened today at this? Anyway, you're accused
put
of.
Off.
Have you actually been convicted of vandalism or no?
They dropped the charges.
But you are in for a restitution hearing that's a civil charge? What actually is this?
Supposedly, I broke the fucking van door, the paddy wagon, when it was already fucking broken because there's tape.
Videotaped to show. I believe videographer Vicki Johnson was taking pictures at that time and showed not only that the door was itself broken, but also that it was referred to as broken by the lieutenant who supervising the operation, Lieutenant Haven.
Unfortunately, at the restitution hearing, which happened within the last 2 weeks, the videotape was viewed secretly by Judge Barton. And even though Lieutenant Habe clearly lied when he claimed the door had been in pristine condition, Bob Duran's attorney, Lane Goldman, erred in not bringing in more testimony from people such as other people have been present, like Johnson, the video photographer, other people watching, to confront Habe's testimony. And Barton, sort of with a ironic smile, said, "I have no choice but to accept Lieutenant Habe's uncontested testimony." And also, apparently, at Lane Goldman's urging, Bob made no tape recording of the case and asked me not to make a tape recording of the case, to which I foolishly consented. So, there's no tape recording of the court proceeding. Bob owes $500 and some odd, and the beat goes on. Again, this is for an incident that happened last August when the Campbell Street residents were improperly denied relocation money, engaged in a public protest,
and were hauled off to a squad car whose door was already damaged, and then in a costly exercise of city police power on behalf of landlords Donna and Forrest Moore, who recently lost in small claims court. Hopefully the other Campbell Street residents will also sue them for the money that they are owed.
Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible.
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. They'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow, the one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes. What a slogan. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
And that was from Stan Freberg's The United States of America, The Early Years, way back in 1960, satire on liberal politicians, of which we have plenty here in Santa Cruz, as well as Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, and you're listening specifically to me, Robert North, Simon Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, which airs every Sunday at 11 o'clock. If you hear anything on this show with which you disagree, or if you wish to have something broadcast around issues of the poor, homeless rights, civil rights for all of us, police abuse concerns, give me a call at 423-HUF, 423-4833. HUF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights group for the poor that I work with. So now a few announcements. There's a number of meetings coming up that might interest folks who are into such things. On Monday, in Santa Cruz at 5 o'clock, the second Monday of every month, there is a police review board hearing, the Citizens Police Review Board. I don't go to these things any longer. I kind of vowed not to until such time as we get enough people to go in mass and confront the CPRB with some real police complaints, its own failings, and make a public demonstration of the farce that's actually going on there. But I still encourage people, if they wish, to go and speak at the oral communications period, which is a long one for the Citizens Police Review Board, and put their case on record there and also in written form. Again, I suggest you use the procedure which I spoke of earlier in the show, write a one-sentence complaint and attach an affidavit. You can also make your complaint public at these meetings. So, for instance, if you file a complaint with the Police Department of Santa Cruz or with the Citizens Police Review Board, and both of those will go through the police department and then come back to the Citizens Police Review Board. And you want that complaint to be public, you have to do it through a process, such as taking it to the board meetings, which happen once a month, and presenting it to the board as a public document. Otherwise, the police department has successfully connived to keep all complaints confidential to protect the reputation, or let's say to conceal the misdoings of its own police department. I'm not too hopeful. I just had a complaint returned to me. They didn't even review it unfounded or unsubstantiated or whatever. It was simply not considered. I think it was some such category. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't make a record of what goes on. We should, particularly with increased harassment on the mall as developers are trying to turn the town into something different than it's been hitherto, a meeting place for different communities. Also coming up on Monday at 7 o'clock in Palo Alto, at their city hall in downtown Palo Alto, is what seems to be the final hearing of their sit-lie law, which is their somewhat softened version of our law. Our law here in Santa Cruz is sit 10 feet from a shop, get a ticket for $162, do it twice, go to jail for up to 6 months, believe it or not. I've never heard of the misdemeanor section being enforced, the second offense, but it's always there to frighten you and move you along, which, of course, is the quintessence of the violation of civil rights. Not that you're taken to jail, but that you're afraid of being taken to jail, and so you allow yourself voluntarily to censor your own civil rights under threat. Anyway, in Palo Alto on Monday, there will be the conclusion of a very important hearing on their own version of this sit-on-the-sidewalk law. They're trying to drive away homeless people from the downtown 10-block university area in upscale Palo Alto. And there's a lot of opposition to this law. There was a hearing in January, which I'm going to play you a few excerpts from shortly, where people spoke in a truly eloquent manner, and the city council there, unlike our city council, actually gives the public time to speak. They actually held over the hearings so that everyone who signed up to speak could speak. Everyone, I think, was given 3 to 5 minutes to speak, something to that effect. And we aren't talking Mayor Matthews, Mayor Rotkin censorship stuff like we got in Santa Cruz. Here in Palo Alto, we have a somewhat different situation. So I encourage people to consider coming to this Palo Alto sit-lie hearing, and if you want to, I'm going to try to actually get a car or two together to go over if enough people are interested. We're doing this on very short notice. It's tomorrow. If you're listening to this tape on Sunday, it's Monday, and we'll probably be caravanning over starting at about 5:15, 5:30. But in order to come, you should give a call to 423-HUFF, announce your interest, or even volunteer a car to go over there and speak at the Palo Alto City Council. The law would make it illegal for people to sit down in the 10-block area downtown. The pretext being used is that they are obstructing. They're creating a danger to pedestrians who might trip over them. I mean, even the Santa Cruz City Council didn't have the chutzpah to try this kind of excuse. They were claiming that it was just inappropriate conduct. Inappropriate. Sort of like you didn't clean your fingernails or something like that. Anyway, here's a little bit of debate from the Palo Alto City Council in January that will be continued, as I said, on March 10th at 7 o'clock in Palo Alto.
We allow businesses to apply for permits to set up tables and chairs on the public sidewalks. These encroachment permits reason that as long as 8 feet of space remains for pedestrians, then some measure of obstruction is justified. People, on the other hand, are not afforded the same reasoned consideration. Why is it that we can not allow people the same compromise as we allow businesses? This community is genuinely worried about people obstructing the sidewalks. As we've heard from others, it will instruct the police department to continue enforcing the existing law, Penal Code 647C. It prohibits just such an act. We've seen the police today show us slides of people standing and blocking the streets due to performance and the like. They were able to ask those people to move along. Code is already there. We don't need a new law. The rationale for piling another law on top of the existing law given by the city is that the present law is difficult to enforce. It's difficult to enforce because it shows some nuance in targeting only those who are actually in the act of obstructing others. The proposed sit-lie ordinance makes the police department's job easier by letting them avoid such subtleties and cite all sitters, regardless of whether they are a safety hazard, the purported intent. This is a prime example of frustrated legislating. I compare it to chopping off a finger to cure an ingrown nail. It's excessive. We don't need it. The sit-lie ordinance will not clear out the occasionally congested sidewalks of Palo Alto. What then will it do? It will act as yet another divisive issue, polarizing rather than bringing together the citizens of Palo Alto. Let's face it, some people of this city consider it an insult and an affront that they have to see others sitting on the ground here. They're pushing for a law to take care of something that annoys them. Instead of trying to be a community, learning to tolerate and coexist, these people are attempting to legislate their preferences. They would have everyone behave according to their own personal code of conduct. Members of the City Council, whether you share these preferences or not, I ask you tonight to consider the implication of legislating one group's version of courtesy on the whole of our community. Such action is a misuse of your powers as legislators. City Council regularly refers to the reputation of Palo Alto as a compassionate community. There is no compassion in this ordinance. I do not believe that the City Council wants to tarnish the reputation of itself and the city with this ordinance. None of us want Palo Alto to move into the future known as that place willing to fight long court battles to defend its right to sweep the poor out of sight and out of mind. I urge you tonight to let this ordinance die. March 10th, to let this ordinance die now. Move on instead to the business of dealing with and not running from the concerns of this city. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bartels. Robert Morgan.
Robert A. Morgan, I live at 1150 Byron Street. Mr. Mayor and council members, I have become very concerned in recent years about a growing disrespect for law. This is a dangerous trend which, if it is not reversed, leads to chaos and anarchy. Why do people not respect the law? Is it possible that the reason is that the law does not always respect the people? I understand that the city's legal department has worked hard to write a sit-lie law that will stand up to a legal challenge. But the essence of a good law is not simply that it can withstand legal scrutiny. In the past, more than a few practices that were by no means good have been supported by the law. King George's laws of taxation were legal, but they weren't good. Slavery was legal, but it wasn't good. Withholding the vote from women was legal, but it wasn't good. Oppressive racial laws were legal, but they weren't good. How did we get rid of these bad laws? By civil disobedience. Were the people that disobeyed these laws bad people? The patriots, the abolitionists, the right to vote women, the civil rights workers? No, they were good people overcoming bad laws. But this process of civil disobedience, as necessary as it sometimes seems to be, weakens the concept of government by law. So to maintain respect for law, we should pass only such laws as have moral and ethical substance, laws that are consonant with our evolving concepts of social justice, concepts that include compassion for those who find themselves temporarily or permanently in disadvantaged positions. We don't need laws that would suit the England of Charles Dickens. We need laws for the United States in the 21st century. We don't need more laws for the convenience of the rich and powerful, but laws that will comfort, strengthen, and encourage those who need help. Practically all of our laws are good and deserve the support of citizens. But any bad laws will infect the system and create a general disrespect for law. We must be sure that our laws respect our people, and that our people will respect our laws. This council has been exemplary in providing opportunities for people to work their way out of hunger and homelessness. But for some, this transition does not come overnight. Let us not write off as hopeless those who are slow to respond to these opportunities. We should not yield to temporary pressures that would sweep problems out of sight, but rather we should work toward the solutions of the problems.
And that was Robert Morgan in Palo Alto in January opposing the sit-lie law, which again comes up for a discussion and vote on Monday, March 10th, 1997. If you're interested, give me a call at 423-4833 if you're interested in going to Palo Alto. Monday is a busy day for a lot of people. Not only is there a police review board meeting at 5 o'clock at City Hall on that day, for those still patient enough to attend such things, but there is activity in court around the City Hall sleep crime chain gang lockdown case, which, of course, is the case of seven people accused of disrupting a public assembly and trespass at Santa Cruz City Hall last September 10th, when some of them chained themselves to furniture in City Hall peacefully to protest the City Council's refusal then, and of course they are refusing now still, to consider any changes to the City's anti-homeless sleeping ban ordinance, Municipal Code 6.36. We'll talk about that trial in a moment, but with us now on the line, we have police violence monitor and community activist Nick Whitehead, whom I call Nutcracker Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hi, hi.
And Nick, you say that on the Monday when motions hearings will begin for the City Hall sleep crime chain gang lockdown case, there's also going to be some other activity happening outside the courthouse.
Calling all underground. Emergency at 12 noon, Monday. Be outside the courthouse on the Water Street side. We're going to have a vigil with signs concerning, in this order, Mumia Abu-Jamal and his situation, Dine Native American. Anybody want to bring signs on that? Big Mountain stuff. And any signs about the persecution of Jim Cosner and other people who were arrested at City Hall for the protesting the homeless right to sleep. They were locked. They locked themselves to the benches as a form of free speech and were arrested in there.
Right, that's actually the longest trial of its kind in some years around homeless issues, involving the most people and with the most serious charges. Each of those seven people, as I understand it, faced two misdemeanors each in that case, and there's a battery of lawyers, unfortunately most of them hack public defenders.
Don't you love them?
Oh yeah.
And I like to bite into them with my little chipmunk teeth.
I also want to suggest, Nick, that you might have a sign or two on behalf of the Palo Alto homeless, who on Monday night, as I've been just saying to the audience, face a new law, a sit-lie criminalization that's going to happen unless there's a lot of testimony against it, unless the City Council has what's hoped it will be a change of heart.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to happen at 7 o'clock in Palo Alto, and some of us are going to go up there later on Monday. So sounds like a lot is happening. You also apparently have been involved, Nick, in monitoring and participating in demonstrations against police violence over in San Jose. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, I will. But just before I do that, I'll remind people once more, come to the Water Street side entrance of the county courthouse with your signs at noon.
On March 10th, Monday.
Yeah, and we'll go on for about 3 hours.
Okay?
Something that the motorists can read who are passing by. They have pretty big signs.
Big signs, and bring lots of money.
Yeah.
If you throw that in the street, it should cause some consternation. Just kidding, of course.
So it's about Mumia Abu-Jamal, Big Mountain, and any homeless protests and persecutions going on here.
Right.
Those things are welcome.
Yeah, good enough. And now what about what happened with you? And I guess you took up David Dumar. The two of you took each other over to San Jose a week or two ago to consider the assassination of a Hispanic man by a police officer. A guy was shot in the back.
It's true. I went with David Dumar, and of course we padlocked ourselves to each other so that the police wouldn't want to do that to us. We were already done.
I see. Making a joke.
Well, you know, you got to shackle yourself and silence yourself in these days of censorship.
Well, you got to, yeah, as they say, stop police abuse, beat yourself up.
Right on. I punch myself in the nose every day in the mirror.
So what happened at this rally?
Oh, man, this to me was way beyond what I was emotionally prepared for. because we met in downtown and we had to march a quarter mile to the park to have the rally. And I was marching behind a woman who was totally sobbing, totally distraught the whole way. I mean, she was a woman of about 40 years plus, whose son had been killed. She was the actual mother of one of the people that the protest was about. It's true he was killed a year ago. This woman was still crying her heart out. I had to physically support her. Two or three times during the course of this march, this woman broke down. It was pretty agonizing.
What were the circumstances of her son's death, you know, Nick?
Several people described it to me, and it's really odd. Like, the son made a mistake of trying to get away from the police, just out of nervousness. He's never been involved in anything as far as the community knows, you know? He was a well-behaved guy pursuing his educational career. But he saw the cops one at night. It's a very bad thing in San Jose to try to escape from the cops at night. They go in hot pursuit. And he, in running away from them on foot, he ended up in a street where something had just happened, a fire in a house, and the fire engine was there and other cop cars were there. So his exit was cut off, and he was in the bright light, the flashing red light. He turned round to give himself up to the cops, and in the middle of this exciting scene, some cop shot him from behind.
So he was shot in the back?
He was shot in the back.
And you know the name of this man?
I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, I remember it too vaguely, but I don't know it. But in fact, various organizations in San Jose, including the...
Oh, yeah, Soto. His family name was Soto, S-O-T-O.
Right, Soto. I remember. It's actually a compound name, too.
Yeah.
If folks are interested in more information, can they give you a call on this case? Can you kind of do... Have you got more written information about it?
I guess I can try to get that from you. Yeah.
And you are still running SPAN, Stop Police Abuse?
I will take complaints about serious police abuse. That's pretty serious stuff.
Okay, so you would...
Verbal harassment.
The, you want some...
Yeah, number is 475-2012. 475-2012.
All right. Well, thank you, Nick White. Anything you want to conclude with?
Yeah, I just want to say that at this rally in San Jose, there were people who had traveled the length and breadth of the state to investigate police abuse, including one from who'd been to Riverside County recently, where there's a lot of abuse against immigrants crossing, probably illegal. And he said, and a couple of people said that they're finding there's more activism, and the people, the local populace, are getting very roused up against police abuse. So there's a positive rouse sign.
The man's name was Gustavo Soto Mesa.
Yeah.
And indeed, San Jose has a sort of an even worse police review situation than Santa Cruz. They have an auditor who's even more powerless than our toy poodle police review board. And in fact, however, as you point out, the community response to police abuse is much more intense and dramatic and massive. I think in 1991 or 92, maybe even 93, and this wasn't around the Rodney King situation, but rather the local police abuse by police violence by officers in San Jose. They had literally hundreds of people at a city council meeting demanding action. It was quite a scene, as I remember. Also want to point out that there is an International Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality, Saturday, March 15th. That's about
the end of next week.
Yeah, it's a week down the road. It's up in San Francisco, 4 o'clock at Mission Police Station, 6:30 Valencia at 17th. And there'll be a video at night at 7 o'clock at 777 Valencia Street. And in case you didn't get all this information, if you are interested in that rally next Saturday, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I can give you what information I have.
423-HUFF, H-U-F-F.
That's the place. Thank you, Nick.
Well, there's one thing else I want to say.
Go ahead.
There was another family whose son had been killed, and this was really impressive. All six of his brothers and sisters stood up on the stage at the rally in Cesar Chavez Park, all six of them. What a closely knit family. And they had jointly got together under the command of the eldest sister, and they had independently investigated the death of their brother and the coroner's report and all that stuff. That was family action on a big scale.
Well, there's been Nutcracker Nick Whitehead giving an update on demonstrations on Monday. Brief update from your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert here. There's been sort of an ongoing controversy between me and Karen Gillette of the Homeless Community Resource Center, recently chronicled in the Metro Santa Cruz in the column of news under the phrase, "No Con Do." I've been requesting that the Homeless Community Resource Center open its meetings to homeless people and the public. Actually, Karen Gillette, the executive director, has claimed that the meetings are open, but she never seems to be able to return phone calls with the times and places of those meetings. Ironically, the time and place of the meeting is on file with the county, I guess, HRA office. They're a nonprofit, and they're required to file a list of their meeting times. But she won't give out that information to me, nor will she post it for her clients. Rather, she insists that people come to her or present her with a written letter to specify what it is they want to talk about so she can schedule it and approve it. I found this to be not just an onerous process, but one that I think that violates the rights of her clients and the public. And I've requested that she not do that, and that she, in fact, just simply announce when the meetings are so people can come to those sections of the meeting that are appropriately open to the public, non-personnel sections. She has refused to do this. In fact, she's gone to her board to make sure that the meetings are closed, and the most recent communication I got from the board through board chair Maggie McKay was that those meetings are closed, and that if somebody wants to go to the meeting, they have to make special arrangements through presumably Karen Gillette or Maggie McKay. And I wrote back asking for specifics, particularly since Maggie McKay is being quoted in a sort of an attack on me in the Metro as being the reason that these meetings are closed. I've actually only been to one or two of these meetings in my life. They're rather boring affairs. I suspect the board doesn't pay much attention to visitors or homeless people generally, although, you know, who knows, they might. And so, you know, why bother to go to them, except that as a matter of principle, people should be allowed access to them. And there's some talk that the Community House Project, the Trailers Not Trolls boondoggle that's ballooned about $2 million, which is supposed to have begun construction in 1991. But here we are in 1997, hasn't happened, and the field in which it's being supposed to be constructed and is still locked to the homeless, right next to the Homeless Community Resource Center. Anyway, that Community House Project may come under the aegis of Karen Gillette at some point, because the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or to exploit the homeless, as some of us call it, seems to be floundering badly, hasn't done an independent audit, has smeared its primary executive officer, Frank Pusilek, who is trying to pull things together. And anyway, so homeless people have an interest in being able to get to board meetings of whatever group, whether it's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless or the Homeless Community Resource Center or the Homeless Health Project, any group that represents homeless in a nonprofit manner and gives out services using public funding should be accountable to the public. And it's strange that they're closing their meetings. Actually, it's not. Karen Gillette has a personal turf war going here, which is kind of unfortunate, and hopefully her board will correct her on this issue. In other news, Neil Coonerty, former mayor and council member, author of the Downtown Ordinances, and owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, came up to me about a week or two ago and told me that I would not be welcome in Georgiana's Cafe. Coonerty has had me barred from his bookshop since 1994, when I led demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, outside his shop against his sit-on-the-sidewalk-go-to-jail laws. He blamed me for a rock that went through his window, claiming I had targeted his store. I had indeed targeted his store for peaceful protest, but not for any kind of violent vandalism. I don't particularly think that's helpful, and I told him so, and I've made that statement publicly. However, now, 3 years later, he comes up to me and tells me I can't sit in Georgiana's Cafe, the little cafe next to the bookshop Santa Cruz, where I frequently have been sitting and having coffee. I'm not sure I'm going to respond to this. I asked a mediator to talk to Neil. I wrote Neil a polite letter. He apparently is refusing mediation and has persuaded Georgiana's owner, Cindy Godrun, to go along with his policy of excluding me. I'm not sure if I'm going to make this a big issue. It seems to be personal with me, but There's also an issue of principle here, I don't know. But this is for your information. Also, another announcement, Free Radio Santa Cruz, to which you are now listening, will be having a meeting at What is Art tomorrow at 7 o'clock. I'm sorry, tonight, on Sunday at 7 o'clock. That's on North Pacific Avenue for those who are interested in coming to the collective who might have some hopes of giving us a place to live, a place to broadcast from, or just have an interest in helping with the station or being on the air. If you want to be on this show, give a call to 423-HUFF, leave a message of any length, and particularly if it's concerned with the homeless rights or police violence or misconduct, I'd be happy to hear what you have to say. Another update, Sean Alimi, or Shit Kicker Sean, as I call him, the one-time Feed the People stalwart, has been cooling his heels in a Contra Costa County jail on methamphetamine drug charges, bogus charges leveled against him, which he has been unable to bail himself out on, some ridiculous bail, like $50,000 or $100,000, some such thing. Well, I've just learned from his attorney that after a hung jury last month, the DA has decided that he cannot refile charges because he does not have sufficient evidence. So Sean is being transported down to Santa Cruz. He'll be here tomorrow in jail, where he will face a similar set of charges, very, very thin charges involving presence of methamphetamine at his place of lodging, where a lot of people came and went. And his attorney believes he'll be released again soon. Feed the People has suffered some harassment, I've been told, by Food Not Bombs workers who have moved their operation to the town clock, which has its advantages and its disadvantages. Feed the People supposedly has been given the hassle by officers Eveleth and Over last Monday. What's the temperature of the soup? Where did you cook it? And so forth. Questions that can be a precursor to an assault on people feeding downtown. Selective assault, I might add, since they don't seem to be going after Food Not Bombs, just Feed the People. It's ironic because Food Not Bombs is the group that has been more high profile in concerning itself with the rights of the homeless, both here and in San Francisco and in Palo Alto, where it's speaking against the Sit Lie ordinance. And Feed the People, under John Earth and Sean Alimi and others, Pat Ring, has declared itself sort of non-political. But it's now getting the hassle, mainly because it's down at Cathcart and Pacific. Well, that's all the time today we have for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 11 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You'll hear more, and hopefully this tape will be replayed throughout the week. Don't